Blog Talk Radio.
When you're down and troubled and you need some love and care and nothing is going right.
So, have you ever felt that like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up. From Los Angeles, a big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I am Dave, the caregiver's caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. Yes, folks, I'm the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we're going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. Sounds so nasty. I hate it when I say it. Hey, we have an exciting show planned for you today. Dr. Jay Shetland, author, will be speaking on healthy diet, weight loss, strengthening the immune system, importance of probiotics, and much, much more. So stay tuned. You do not want to miss this show, folks. I am your host today, Dave Nassani, and this show is to caregivers of every single kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers, actually there's three, is that they are caring, they are selfless, they are sacrificial. Sounds like good things, right? But they're also prone to burnout because of those first three things. Because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. That's right. That's hard to believe, isn't it? Folks, learn a lesson from the airlines. Remember, every time you board a plane, you tune them out when they tell you, you know, all the emergency stuff, that if there's an emergency and, you know, the mask falls out of the ceiling, that you're supposed to put your oxygen mask on first before you help your child with their mask. And the reason is simple, because they know that you will most likely black out if you don't put your needs above theirs. And then you won't be of any help to anybody. And guess what? Caregivers are exactly the same way. Now, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects that it can have on us. It automatically throws us into this thing. Gosh, just what we need, another thing, called the grief process. Ouch. Unfortunately, folks, there is only one way out of the grief process, and that is to go through the grief process. You can't go up, you can't go down, you can't go around. You got to go through it. And we are here to help you if you feel like you're stuck in your grief process. Now, if this is your first time tuning in, you can learn more about me and the show and my radio podcast and my books and my videos and my blog by just going to my website. Yeah, I know it sounds like it's all about me, but it's not. It's all about you. So my website, DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com. Simple, right? Or if that's too hard for you, a shortcut, DaveNass.com. That's Dave and then the first four letters of my last name, N like Nancy. I forgot what N like. N like Nancy, A like Apple, S like Sam, S like Sam. DaveNass.com or DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com. Either one works. And when you go to my website, guess what? Guess what I'm going to do for you. If you just take my short quiz, Are You a Candidate for Burnout?, which is going to help you immensely, you are going to get a free copy of my ebook, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships, the story about my amazing wife's story and my story that everyone says is amazing also. Go figure. And it's still getting rave reviews on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. So please don't miss out on this very informative quiz that will assess where you are in the burnout process. And you get my book absolutely free just for doing that. Amazon is selling this thing for almost $10, so it's a great value. I want to take this moment now to thank my guests for the last 2 weeks, Steve Dixon and Barbara Allison, speaking about grief and the challenges of young moms raising their young kids, respectively. To hear these very interesting and informative interviews, just go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com and click on the Inspiring Interviews tab, or just go to iTunes tab and you can hear it that way. All right, enough of that. I'm going to unmute my guest now, Dr. Jay. Are you there, Dr. Jay?
Yes, good to be here.
Oh, great. I love it when they're there waiting and there's no silence at the other end. Welcome to the show and thank you so much for patiently sitting through all that introduction stuff for our first-time listeners.
My pleasure.
No problem. Dr. Jay, I want to thank you once again for agreeing to this interview on such last-minute notice. because my double amputee, Jim Grivnon, had to go into surgery for another unexpected problem with his amputee legs. And gosh, this is the 8th surgery he's had so far. We're just waiting for him to recover from all of this stuff. We're just going to put him off until a better season in his life. And I know you will not want to miss that interview when we get around to doing it. Now, just a reminder that all these shows are recorded podcasts after they go live, as this one will be. So never miss any of them if you don't catch them live. Well, let's get into this, Dr. J. We've got a lot of questions to ask you because you are one heck of a guy. First of all, I understand that you, maybe before I ask any questions, why don't you take a moment and just kind of introduce yourself briefly. Don't give us too much information because we'll get into that, you know, with the questions. But who are you? Tell the people who you are.
Well, I'm Dr. Shetland, and I've had the blessing and privilege of living and practicing in the U.S., in Europe, and in Asia. So I have a nice broad perspective of healthcare around the world rather than just what we think it is in America and our American bubble where we think, oh, well, healthcare is so much better somewhere else. And it's not. It has its problems everywhere. So that's me in a nutshell.
I've got East meets West with you.
That's right. I've been able to enjoy a lot of that, the European adventure, as well as the, you know, being back in the States now with my lovely family, my wife, Shannon, who is deaf, and our 4 kids.
Really? I didn't know that. Wow, you've got your hands full there, don't you? You are truly a caregiver. Well, let's get
It's a great experience.
I understand that you and your family have been through some serious challenges. Tell us what's been going on over there.
Well, I think the story that would be best to share today is of my 4th child. Shannon and I, our last child, Harrison, has a very interesting story. And not to take any limelight out of, you know, off the other kids. All my kids are wonderful, as I'm sure all the listeners, their kids are wonderful. But Harrison's got such an amazing story because when he was born, a day or two after he was born, he developed spinal meningitis, which is a bacterial infection around your brain and your spinal cord. And if there's anywhere you don't want to have a bacterial infection, that is it. Because you know, affecting your brain and your nervous system, which controls everything, that can be deadly within 48 hours.
Oh, my God.
So, you know, I don't know what it is with Murphy's Law and kids, but they always get sick in the middle of the night on weekends, right? I don't know what's up with that. But here it is, you know, Saturday night, late at night, and this kid's showing some very serious symptoms. He had been curled up in the womb in fetal position for 9 months, and here he is very extension dominant, meaning he's arching back rather than curling up forward, which is a pretty prominent sign of meningitis. He's wincing at light and wincing any time we'd move him just in pain, just from any movement. So I'm thinking, oh, does not look good, though this is not my specialty. So first thing Sunday morning, we called up his pediatrician. And I explained the symptoms over the phone. He says, you know what, this sounds serious. I'll meet you at the emergency room right now. So my wife and I swaddled up him in blankets and raced over to the emergency room. And we met the doctor there, the pediatrician, who, great gentleman. And he had me hold Harrison's head and his feet together to really put a C-curve into his spine, really open that spine up so he could put a big needle in his back called a spinal tap and draw up the spinal fluid. Well, the spinal fluid is supposed to be clear as it circulates around your brain and spinal cord every 2 hours to help protect it from, you know, impact or shock and support everything and lubricate everything properly. And it was just milky white because it was full of bacteria.
Wow.
Now, the scary thing with bacterial meningitis is there's 24 strands and 8 of them are deadly. And the only way to know which one you have is to do a test in a Petri dish, which takes 24 to 48 hours, and there's no time to find out, is this a deadly strand or not, and which one is it? So as the pediatrician looked at me, he's like, you know, Jay, we're going to have to load this kid up with every heavy hitter antibiotic that we've got, or he's not going to live to see tomorrow, because we're 36 hours into this by this point. So, you know, Shannon and I discuss it. They wheel him off. They, you know, put the PICC lines and IVs in, and as I'm reading the label of the antibiotics, it says, side effects may cause permanent deafness. I know because my wife is permanently deaf. That's how she became deaf. Was she had meningitis when she was 3 years old and completely lost. Haven't heard a thing since. May cause permanent kidney problems, or may cause permanent motor neurological problems known as cerebral palsy. So as we wheel this kid off, I'm just thinking to myself, you know, these are some heavy hitter side effects, but let's just see if he lives to see tomorrow, and then we'll deal with this stuff on the flip side if he makes it.
Wow.
So we just load him up with all these heavy antibiotics, which thank goodness we live in a day and age where we have these kind of things. But, you know, whenever there's a very strong or potent chemical or, you know, something like this that we use, there's oftentimes side effects besides the effect that we want. That's just the give and take of the universe, mm-hmm. how that works.
Sure.
But we loaded him up for four times a day for 21 days, and luckily he pulled through. And so after that, as he was about a month old, I just noticed, God, there's some things just not right with this kid. What's going on here? And we, you know, but the 2 month mark, when it was time to take him back in for his 2 month checkup, we take him into the pediatrician, and I'd noticed, you know, his reflexes were a little odd. You know, if he kind of did a pseudo drop for just like an inch or two, his normal reflexes to try to catch yourself were opposite, and his eyes were rolled up in his head and things like this. And I thought, something's just not right here.
Yeah, that doesn't sound good.
Yeah. So we go into the pediatrician, and he comes into the room. He kind of checks over Harrison, and I see him kind of posturing to break the news, if you kind of can picture in your mind how the doctor postures to break the bad news. And, you know, he looks at Shannon, he looks at me, and he looks back at her so she could read his lips, and he says, Jay, Shannon, you guys are just going to have to prepare yourself because this kid's just not right. It looks like he has a serious case of cerebral palsy. His exact words were, you know, he'll be smart, but he'll never be able to run or kick a ball. Stairs are going to be challenging, let alone just, you know, your regular day-to-day getting around. And it didn't really impact me until he mentioned this, that I looked at his gait, and he had a very gimpy gait and one arm that didn't work, so he had to use just a single hand to use the stethoscope. And I realized, oh, my heck, his pediatrician has cerebral palsy.
Wow.
Obviously, he was smart enough to get through medical school, but he's clearly challenged on some physical things, but he gets along pretty well. But, so this is what we got to look forward to.
So that was encouraging, kind of.
Yeah, kind of. Well, as I'm driving home, I'm thinking to myself, okay. Oh, and I have to mention there, he a very important point he made. He goes, okay, so now we know your kid's got cerebral palsy, so let's get him vaccinated and, you know, load him up with all these shots. And I had to stop him and say, well, Doc, not that I'm against those, but if this kid has a serious neurological challenge, I just don't feel right with the knowledge that I have to put heavy metals like aluminum and mercury and things directly into his bloodstream that could also impede any neurological recovery. And so we had to make a kind of a hard decision there, and he was cool about it. He, as a pediatrician, I'm sure he faces that battle regularly with people that want to vaccinate or don't want to vaccinate, whatever. But it seemed to make sense with the way we discussed it. So we're driving home, and I'm thinking to myself, why do I have this kid? Everybody we meet in this world is for a reason. We either need to learn something from them, or they need to learn something from us. We need to let them serve us, or we need to serve them somehow to either make this world a better place or, you know, develop ourselves some way. I thought, okay, why do I have this kid? And as I'm driving home, I had this very strong impression that hit me that said, you know what you need to do. You know the recipe to help your own child because you do it with your patients. Mm-hmm. You're just going to have to do it and be patient because it's going to work on Harrison's time, not Jay's time. And so that's where we really went. That's what launched us into our caregiving opportunity for Harrison to say, okay, we know where you are, but we have a vision of where you are supposed to be, and I think I have a roadmap now how to get there. And so that's the story of the boy who would never walk or never run because the pediatrician referred him to a neurologist who also said to us point blank, this boy will never run or ride a bike. And anyway, so
does he?
That's how. Well, the interesting thing is that recipe that I felt we needed to do included help removing nerve interference so his brain and body could communicate, getting the right nutritional building blocks into that kid's body so that he nutritionally had what he needed to build healthy cells to replace challenged cells. We all make 300 billion cells a day in our body, and if we keep feeding ourselves the toxic crap or not getting the right nutritional building blocks in, and we're wondering, why do I not get better from these ailments? Well, it's because we're stuck in the same pattern nutritionally or neurologically or, you know, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. So the other thing was, you know, and he was nursing at the time, so I'm like, all right, honey, you've got to eat really good and avoid the toxins because that's what's going into this kid, and we've got to, you know, fire up his nervous system, and we've got to, you know, and I've got to give credit where credit's due. We prayed our guts out. We pulled out all stops. We did everything we could on a physical, spiritual, mental, emotional level to help this kid. And today, it took years. This is what's interesting is most of us as parents, we want instant results, instant gratification. But it took years to see the results start to help. As a matter of fact, the first 2 years, it was so slow, I went almost to the point of like, oh, we're not getting anywhere. And then he'd overcome a challenge. I'm like, oh, yeah, his time, not my time. And I remember 2 years old, it was just before we were getting ready to move home from Portugal back to the U.S. I guess he was 3 years old because we'd been there for 2 years. And we were at the park. Soccer's huge over there. And all of a sudden the kid got up and he ran out and grabbed a soccer ball and started running and kicking a soccer ball. And I filmed it. I had to catch it on film. I was like, this is a miracle. This is something that kid was never supposed to be able to do. Wow. And, you know, he's 12 now, and he's actually written a book of his story, which is, I think, brilliant. And he, you know, he likes to run 5Ks, the boy who would never run. And it's miraculous that he does that.
Well, what impact did all these challenges have on your faith? I mean, you have faith in God, I assume.
I do. And what I think was so powerful, and it's hard not to get, you know, a little emotional talking about all this stuff, but what I think is so powerful is, as a physician and all the science that I've studied, sometimes people try to weigh too heavy on science and they negate the spiritual, and I just think the two operate so well together when you're open-minded on both sides of the fence. And it was so strengthening to, I believe, my faith and my testimony of a higher power in seeing that, you know what, I felt a little answer to a prayer just driving home that day from the doctor's office that, okay, this is going to work. I know what I need to do, but I have to be patient, and it works in his time. And it did. And it wasn't me. I couldn't force it. I couldn't push it. I couldn't. All I could do was what I felt led to do and let go of the wheel and just let Harrison heal himself. Because we all have that innate intelligence inside us to heal ourselves, but unfortunately we're all programmed that we want to speed it along.
Well, that's amazing. That's amazing. And I think this would be a good time to take a break, and then we can talk about, you know, your role as a caregiver to Harrison and go on in that way. So don't go away. We will be right back.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. Available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Hear what Lynn Barrington, best-selling author of Daddies and Daughters, published by Simon & Schuster, has to say about it. You think you have it bad? Read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you will be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy Award winner, the godfather of contemporary gospel music, Andre Crouch? This book will be an encouragement to anyone who reads it. Charlene just won't let the promises of God go. She's hanging on to her positive, godly attitude, and I look forward to the day when she will receive all that she's believing that God will do for her. In the meantime, she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. Her smile has gotten just as big as it was before her stroke. She's not just a survivor. She's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. I'm glad to know her and her testimony. Read this book. You will be encouraged regardless of what you're going through. So get your copy of One Arm, One Leg, and 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. But if you purchased it from the author's website, Dave and Charlene Nassani will personally autograph your own copy. Just go to DaveNass.com. That's Dave, and then N like Nancy, A like Apple, S like Sam, S like Sam.com. DaveNass.com. Oh, and while you're on his website, don't forget to leave your name and email address so that Dave can send you his free report, 10 Mistakes All Caregivers Make That You Shouldn't, just for visiting the site. There are a lot of resources, videos, and links to his radio podcast. Again, DaveNass.com. That's NASS. Now let's rejoin Dave Nassani and his guest on Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Program on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.
And we are back. Talking to Dr. Jay Shetland. Amazing interview. So far he's told us about how his son had spinal meningitis and it led to cerebral palsy because of the antibiotics that he was on. And wow, just let's go on. Let's talk about your role as a caregiver to Harrison now, Dr. Jay, and how you've been improving his condition. Just tell us what you've been doing, to this boy. Just go ahead, one by one. Take it in any order you want, and pace yourself. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I think it's important with any child when their minds are still pliable and they're still growing and developing, to help them just feel normal. I feel like other kids. I mean, we all have a variety of the spices, the variety of life on this planet, and rather than judging each other for those different things, just encouraging for each other to find their own strengths and lean on the strengths, and then recognize the weaknesses and maybe work on the weaknesses, but don't dwell on them. And so for Harrison, it was just a big thing of treating him like normal and just telling him, can't isn't a vocabulary word in our family. We just got to move past that. Don't say you can't. Say I don't really think I can do that so easy right now, but I'll keep trying. Rather than I can't do that. And I think that's an important thing for kids so that they grow up with that I can do mentality. I look at some pretty miraculous people that I've met in my lifetime. Like you're talking about this gentleman who's a paraplegic and meeting a paraplegic gal just a month or two ago in Los Angeles that's a gymnast. My goodness. I mean, talk about looking past the obstacles. When you focus on that greater prize down the road and stay focused on that, the obstacles just turn into speed bumps instead of, mountains. And
sure.
So I think that headspace is a big part of it. Big part of it.
There's no shortage of encouraging people that we can look at. I think of that evangelist, Nick Volacek, who has no arms, no legs, and the guy's got an international ministry. He got a gorgeous wife. He's having children. He skydives, and my own wife, who's lost her speech through a stroke, she hasn't spoken in 19 years, yet she communicates very well. I've seen her talk to strangers at a restaurant while we're waiting for our table, and they're just having a good old conversation. She's touching and gesturing, and she doesn't even know that she can't speak, or that he doesn't know that she can't speak. So, yeah, it doesn't take much.
That's amazing. Amazing. So there's so many wonderful stories out there, and I think that headspace is so important because if we look at those obstacles or challenges that different people face, it's easy to look across the table and go, wow, I could never handle your challenges. I got my own to deal with, but I could never handle yours. But yet you handle them just fine. And then you're looking at me going, thank goodness I got my own challenges because I couldn't live with your challenges. So it's funny how adaptive human beings are. It's miraculous to me, and that's where I think another part of that faith comes in. When we look at that higher power, or we look for some strength from a higher power, we're looking beyond ourselves, and that's where I think caregivers are so powerful. The whenever I look at somebody who's won a marathon or a half marathon, not necessarily won, but completed it, and the tears are pouring off their face, and it's like, that was for my dad, or that was for my mom who's fighting breast cancer. Whenever we do it for a higher power or for someone else that we care about, that we love, we're unstoppable. We're just unstoppable.
Amen. Wow.
So, with Harrison, I got to give credit to his mom because she is such a powerful woman. I mean, here she is. She hasn't heard a thing since 3 years old. And yet, here's the beauty in that is her her challenge is her superpower. Because to me, I look at that and go, wow. So you've heard... So you've never heard where I've heard day in, day out growing up in elementary, you can't do this, you can't do that, you're too short, you're too this, you're too that. And she doesn't hear that negativity. So her exposure to the general negativity in society is so much less than you and I have experienced. And I think it's beautiful in its own sense. And so as she grew up, she was on a drill team where she couldn't hear a single beat of the music, yet she kept time perfectly with all the other girls where their team took state in high school. And I'm thinking, how did you do that? And so little Harrison could look up to his mom and go, you know, gosh, if she could do that, I can walk or run or, you know, whatever his challenges for that he was facing. So kudos to her.
We got to get our two wives together. You know, my wife doesn't speak and your wife doesn't hear. I would love to see how they communicate together because I bet they could do it.
That would be fun. That would be fun. Well, I think another fun miracle with Harrison is just now it's the point that I don't want to say we're past the miracle because every day is a miracle. But I look at this kid and go, wow, he looks just like every other kid at school now. Now, there are people out there, caregivers, that are dealing with things that maybe there isn't a cure or an overcome for. You just that person's challenge is to mentally or physically or mentally or spiritually overcome that rather than actually physically overcome that. I don't know why it is, but Harrison has been able to physically reach a state where he looks and acts like every other kid at school. And to me, if that isn't shy of a miracle, I don't know what is, because there's no cure for cerebral palsy. I mean, ask any medical doctor out there.
Yeah.
And yet I live with that every day, that he doesn't face that challenge anymore. I mean, as his parent, watching him grow up for 12 years, I can see there's one or two little, like, he still can't ride a bike. The balance for riding a bike, it's not there. But walking, running, taekwondo, you know, doing these other things to challenge him and push that balance and equilibrium to the point where he couldn't even, it took him until he was 2 years old to be able to stand up. Where most kids stand, you know, he was walking and falling and hitting his head like crazy when he was 3-4 years old. And today to look at that and go, wow, this kid is just smart as a whip and has overcome those things. And it's just, to me, I think his blessing is to be an inspiration to others, I think. And anyway, so I can't take credit for him. His little body did the healing. I just did what I was, however you want to say it, inspired or led to do, and what I was taught to. I mean, thank goodness I had the schooling that I had, but yet the world travel experience that I had to be open-minded enough to look at natural things to help him rather than bombard him with other drugs that we think might have helped but more likely would have hindered.
Sure, and you know, you do have to take control of your medical advice that you're given. You can't just blindly take the advice of a doctor. I mean, that's why my wife cannot speak today, because I'm not a doctor. I should have been a doctor. If I was a doctor, she'd still be speaking today, because, first of all, the paramedics took her to the wrong hospital. They took her to this rinky-dink private hospital that had a substandard CAT scan machine instead of taking her 10 minutes further to the medical center that has state-of-the-art equipment. And so, you know, the bottom line is she had a blood clot, and they didn't get that blood clot-busting drug in her soon enough, and it was just some bad decisions. They didn't have enough information because she was in the wrong place, and you know, what are you going to do? But you did the right thing in just questioning what the doctors, because it sounds like all they want to do is fill them up with more antibiotics. And thank God that you had the wisdom and the discernment, and I'm sure it came from God and your training to do the right thing. So kudos to you.
Thank you. Well, I don't know where I can take credit on that. I just, you know, followed what I felt. But I think we all have that. All of us have an innate intelligence within us that runs and controls everything in our body, but also that gut feeling, that spiritual intuition that we need to listen to sometimes and say, is this really what we need to do? And I would just, as a modern physician today, I would throw out the idea that less is more. There are so many people now taking so many medications, and your body is this micro universe, this micro chemistry plant. Your liver is doing 2,000 chemical equations every second. And when we have 5, 6, 7 pharmaceutical drugs that we're taking, that outside-in chemistry altering our inside chemistry, we can't self-regulate if we're bombarded with outside chemistry. So I don't want people to take this wrong, and I'm saying, well, don't take your drugs, you know, consult with your physician, but be of the mindset that less is more. I'm just going to throw this statistic out there. The average American, this study came out in 2012, is taking 12 prescription drugs a day.
Wow.
Now, that I don't take any, which means somebody's taking 24. And I have to admit, I practiced, there was a time I practiced in a geriatric population where, you know, these poor people were taking 20. I did have somebody coming in taking 23 pills, where they're taking this one for whatever was bugging them, and this one for the side effects of that one, and this one for that. It becomes this train of medications. And I'm going to tell you, for your health and longevity and quality of life, less is more. You just can't follow blindly on that stuff. Anyway, so that was another thing with Harrison, as we tried to do less is more.
What is the healthy diet that you put him on, and what kind of healthy diet should we all be on? And, you know, the immune system. How do we be healthy? I mean, how do we lose weight if we're overweight? You know, there's so many diets out there. There's so many conflicting information. Nobody can agree on anything. What is your philosophy on this?
It's simplicity, because we're omnivores. We're designed, yes, we can eat protein and sugars and fats, but combining certain foods is better. Our digestive system likes it better. We've been raised on steak and potatoes since the 40s. Meat is a protein. It occurs naturally on planet Earth with fat. Like if you had a steak, it's going to have a marble of fat with the steak. Fats and proteins come together naturally. Digesting those together is much easier than when we have a starch like a potato or a bread with a protein. Granted, we can digest it, but it's harder on our system because a starch needs an alkaline environment. A protein needs an acidic environment. So when we have a bite of steak, our brain reads that and goes, oh, time to crank up the acid in the stomach. Then we have a bite of bread or french fries with it, and it goes, wait a minute, I got to lower the acidity. And it's this back and forth thing. So that's just one little thing to think about. We are definitely
we're eating our foods. I'm sorry for interrupting, but we're eating our foods in the wrong order and in the wrong combinations.
Correct, because the biggest problem in those combinations is sugar. I mean, sugar is in everything, and it's the most addictive food in America for sure.
Think?
Five times. Yeah. You and I, we consume probably 150 to 200 pounds of sugar per year, per person, where at the turn of the 19th century, it was less than 5 per year. I mean, we're eating a chocolate bunny of ourselves every year, and our pancreas is hating us for it, and so is the rest of our body, because it totally kills our immune system. And it makes us store fat. Sugar causes fat storage, not fat. We in the 70s thought, if we eat fat, we'll get fat. But what it's come down to is, go ahead.
I was just going to say, many, many years ago, I used to have a restaurant, and part of the things that we used to do is we used to sell Hawaiian shaved ice. And so we used to make our own syrup. And do you know, we had a 5-gallon bucket that we filled halfway with water. And guess what we put in there? A 5-pound bag of sugar. We dumped the whole 5 pounds into this 5-gallon bucket, and we stirred and we stirred and we stirred, and that was our syrup. 5 pounds of sugar.
It.
Can you believe that?
I believe it.
That was an eye opener for me.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
And it's sugar is. Oh, you're fine. Sugar is everywhere in our diet. I mean, high fructose corn syrup is hiding in everything. I've even seen it in canned vegetables. I'm like, why is this in here? So, the number one most important thing we need to really limit, I mean, seriously take a look at, is limiting the sugar, increasing more fruits and vegetables. But even fruits are sugar, so we got to kind of watch those. They're just a healthier sugar. But that's where I would start. And I'll tell you, for health, for weight loss, just general health, 80% of it's diet. Only 20% of it's exercise. Though exercise is important. Diet is critical. And we just neglect that because we're in such a high-paced society these days. Matter of fact, living in Portugal, one of the biggest lessons I learned when I got there is everybody takes a 2-3-hour lunch. And when you go to dinner somewhere, there is no – it's not fast food. Everywhere you go, you sit down and eat. Any restaurant, you're going to sit down and enjoy your meal, and you're going to have a nice conversation rather than the meal being an inconvenience that you have to do to get onto your next project you're working on, like it is here, unfortunately. So, you got to enjoy your meals and make them home-cooked. And this is I'm going to throw this tidbit out there. When you go to the grocery store, stick to the periphery, because what's in the middle?
Tell me.
The processed stuff. The processed stuff. Everything that's boxed and canned and stuff. So, unfortunately, with those quick, easy things, we end up sacrificing health and longevity. Where if we stick to the periphery, we've got the fresh fruits and vegetables. There's dairy and meat and grains, and we could go off in the whole, you know, quality of our meats and stuff like that. But big thing I would say sticks to periphery. The golden gem that's in the middle, honestly, is the frozen fruits and vegetables, because they, by law, have to be flash frozen within 5 hours of picking. So they have 10 times the nutritional value of something in a can. But you got to go in there with your guard up, because on the side of the fruits and vegetables are the pies and the pizzas. So you got to be careful going into that aisle.
And the ice cream.
Exactly.
Well, any tips for the holiday eating, your typical Thanksgiving meal? What should we do when the turkey comes out and the mashed potatoes and the gravy and the yams and the stuffing? And what are your do's and don'ts on, I said Thanksgiving, we just went through Thanksgiving, and now Christmas, same thing, rerun.
Yeah, well, I say this is the toughest time of year, but I say go ahead and live large on those big days, but your next day should be a reset day where you really rest your pancreas, where it's a very good protein day, no sugar day. And that way you can kind of reboot and then move forward being more conservative through the week. But when you have a big day, and I think everybody should have one big free day every week, because otherwise we lose our sanity.
Oh,
you try to push it too hard, too long, it's really difficult.
Yeah,
but,
especially
the
caregivers. They're already going crazy, you know?
Yeah. So if M&M's are your thing, then you just have your M&M's all you want on one day per week, and that's just, but don't have them. I'm just going to have a little bit each day, because what you're doing is you're over-sugar stimulating your system, and your pancreas will start kicking out that insulin. And if we do it too long, that's what leads to type 2 diabetes. But if you can give your pancreas a break by having a free day each week, a free day each week, so you're blowing it that day, but you're taking care of yourself the other 6 days a week, boy, it just goes a long way for the mileage of your body.
So what's the best kind of exercise, do you think, that's not too time-consuming? Because these caregivers that are listening to us, they don't have time to exercise. But what can they do to increase their activity?
Well, I think you should make time, invest a little time in your body. It's not finding it, it's making it. But you don't need as much exercise as people tell you. 20 minutes of good exercise is excellent. I mean, if it's going for a nice 20-minute walk, or maybe a brisk walk or jog, that's great. 20 minutes of doing something at the gym, pushing some weights around, excellent. I even say if you can squeeze in, 5 to 10 minutes of doing push-ups and maybe some running in place, where you run as fast as you can in place for 20 seconds, and then you kind of move it easy for 10 seconds. Then you're up for 20 seconds, down for 10 seconds. If you can do that for 3 minutes, I'm guarantee you, you'll be sweating like crazy in 3 minutes. As a matter of fact, research shows that doing that, what I just mentioned, for 3 minutes, 20 seconds, as fast as you can, 10 seconds, just kind of a jog, in 3 minutes, it's the equivalent workout of a 20-minute run.
Really?
Can you believe that?
And
yeah, isn't that crazy?
So we want to sweat, right? Is that a good thing?
It's good to sweat. Good to sweat. Good to get the blood, the juices flowing with getting that heart rate up for those peak relax is excellent. Matter of fact, Dr. McCullough is really big into that. For like 8 minutes, he suggests. And you don't do it every day because it's too much. You got to do it just a couple times a week.
Oh, well, that's good. Well, listen, we have another break.
I want to throw one more thing.
Go ahead.
Before we get to break, let me just say push-ups are awesome because they're a plank, so you're working your core, your chest, your back. If you watch P90X or something, there's 100 different types of push-ups you can do. And when we come back from the break, we'll just kind of pick up on how to do those easy.
Yeah, I like push-ups because they make my biceps and my triceps look bigger, you know.
Nice.
All right, we'll be back in 2 minutes. Enough of me. Hold on.
Tune in to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver program, every Saturday at 3:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, only on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. The whole purpose of this show is to help support you in your caregiving responsibilities so that you take care of yourself first, so that you don't burn out, because your loved ones are counting on you to take care of them. And Dave Nassani should know. He's been a caregiver to his wife for over 19 years after she suffered a debilitating stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on her right side. After a 2-year grieving period, She came to the realization that she had to play the cards that she was dealt. And so she decided to reinvent herself and attempt to do all the things that she was famous for doing before her stroke, like gourmet cooking, hosting dinner parties for 12, interior decorating, sewing, and too many other hobbies and activities to mention here. She now basically makes us normal people look like whiners and complainers by continuing to do almost everything she did before her stroke. But in essence, she does it with one arm and one leg tied behind her back, and she might as well have duct tape over her mouth too, since she can't speak. And she does it all with her amazing positive attitude and smile. So what's your excuse for not playing the cards that you were dealt and turning those lemons into lemonade? Dave has been so inspired by Charlene's attitude that it inspired him to reach out to caregivers by writing 3 books and starting this radio program to make sure that caregivers have a place to go to get the support that they need in order to avoid burnout and to get through the grief process. Now get ready to learn how you can avoid burnout and survive grief. It's Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. And here again is your host, Dave Nassar.
And we are back again with Dr. Jay Shetland, amazing man telling his amazing story. Dr. Jay.
Yes.
You made some promises here. Let's get into now some of the really good stuff, like your immune system. Like I'm getting a scratchy throat right now, and my nose is running, and I'm feeling like a cold wants to come on me. And so I told my wife, I'm going to drink a hot toddy. I'm going to take a hot bath. I'm going to sweat it out of me. And usually in the morning I feel good. I'm taking, you know, I'm extra vitamin C, extra echinacea. And some people say I'm wasting my time because there's scientific studies. It's vitamin C doesn't help, echinacea. I mean, but I don't listen to them because it seems to help with me. What about the immune system? Go ahead.
Well, the immune system is a very
immune system. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a hot topic, and it's a very complicated system. And it's easy to look at your digestive system and say, okay, here's the stomach, the duodenum, the small intestine, large intestine. But your immune system is spread throughout your body. It's a very complicated system.
Really?
And a huge part of your immune system is really your gut, the bacteria in your gut. I mean, there's 10 times more bacteria in your body than there are cells in your body because the bacteria is so much smaller.
Really?
It's hugely outnumbered. And most of them are in the gut, and there's good bacteria and bad bacteria. And to keep the good bacteria strong, it's very important to eat the right foods, probiotic-type foods. And I'm going to tell you, I think your nervous system is your number one. It's the first system that develops when we're in our embryonic state that actually branches out and plugs into every other living cell in our body. So as we're growing and developing, our nervous system controls the whole show. So your brain's your central computer. Your nervous system is your communication AT&T network highway of passing that information between your brain, and which is constantly monitoring and controlling your body. And so your immune system is a huge part of controlling that immune system. Your nervous system is a big part of controlling that immune system. So gut balancing your bacteria, very important. Having your nervous system firing properly, which I would recommend, you know, periodically seeing a chiropractor or doctor of osteopath, one that you trust that can help keep things moving that way. Getting the good nutritional counseling of eating the right foods. Now, here's an important thing. We just talked about sugar. Sugar is very acidic. It's very hard on our immune system. It definitely suppresses our immune system. Other things that suppress our immune system, stress. So I know caregivers are stressed out a lot.
You got to take some
time for yourself. If you don't take me time, it's going to affect your immune system. You got to be able to unplug once in a while.
What I keep telling them. They won't listen.
Go watch a movie, or meditate, or whatever. Get a little scripture study in, or a self-help book or something that helps take your mind off of where you are and helps you with where you want to be. So there's a lot of combinations that go into this. The avoiding the sugar, getting the more fruits and vegetables so we get the micronutrients and phytonutrients that we need to help boost our immune system. They also, green vegetables, lower our body pH. Now, this is interesting because if our body pH is high, if we're very acidic from having too much sugar or acidic foods, which there are some that are good for us, like pineapple's acidic. It's a fruit. It's good for us. But too much of it makes us very acidic. And some people might notice, oh, I'm getting all these canker sores after eating pineapple.
Right,
because
that's me.
It's the scale of acidity.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're more alkaline, we are better at fighting bacteria, viruses, and believe it or not, even cancer.
Wow.
So we want to keep that body alkaline. And there are cool little alkalinity papers you can get and test your urine in the morning or your spit or whatever and see, gosh, staying alkaline? Good, yeah. But if you're not, if you're acidic, you got to hit more greens or start drinking some green drinks or something.
Now, since you mentioned canker sores, you know, that's been a battle with me all my life as a child, and they're very, very painful. But I've noticed that yogurt helps most of the time, not all of the time, but most of the time, and this pill called L-lysine. Now, why do they help? Because, I mean,
L-lysine
that's scientifically
helps with
proved,
cold
right?
sores. Are you talking cold sores or canker sores?
No.
Cold sores on the outside of the mouth?
Right. I hardly ever get them. I get them maybe once a year, a cold sore. But most of the sores are inside the gums, you know.
Gotcha.
Little white things. But L-lysine seems to help it.
Yeah, L-lysine, it's a really good.
What is that? Is it like a bacteria or something? Good bacteria?
No, it's just an amino acid. That's what's so amazing. It's an amino acid, but it's very antiviral. Amino acids, so it's very strong against the viruses, like the cold sore themselves. Canker sores, it might help a little bit, but I'll tell you what I found is really helpful for canker sores.
What?
Coconut oil. Just
taking
a little on your finger and wipe it on your canker sores. It's very soothing. And coconut oil has amazing healing properties, very close to human breast milk, where it's very antibacterial, antimicrobial, antiviral. It's awesome stuff.
Coconut oil or coconut milk?
Coconut oil.
Okay. So canker sores is a form of herpes simplex, isn't it?
Canker sores, and that's why the lysine works well, is because it's an amino acid that's very good against that virus. Canker sores are more of an acidic outbreak, typically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Typically.
Good. Okay. Sorry to interrupt. Go back to what you were talking about.
Just okay. So, you know, the immune system's complicated, so we're looking at the nervous system, balancing that out. We're looking at the diet, balancing that out. Vitamin C is helpful, but it's a preemptive strike. Once you're already sick, vitamin C is not as helpful.
Mm. How much should we take? Because there's such controversy. Some say 1,000 milligrams a day, you're wasting your time. 500 a day. I mean, you can barely get it below 500 milligrams. They sell it 500 and 1,000. And I read that that's much. I mean, can you OD on it? I mean, what is your recommended dosage?
It's a water-soluble vitamin. I don't think you can OD on it. If you're taking green drinks and getting fruits and vegetables, I think you're getting – again, I'm a simpleton. My whole nutritional coaching to patients is very simple-oriented. I'm not a big pill person. For patients, I like to eat actual foods. So I would say if you're getting enough fruits and vegetables or getting some green drinks where they're liquid-based and you can drink them right in, you're probably getting plenty. You're probably getting more than you realize, 1,000 or 5,000 per day, which is, my understanding, is still okay.
So is that enough as a preemptive strike of a cold?
I think so, but it takes the balance of the other things as well. I mean, here's the thing. When do college kids get most sick? It's
when they're
finals
studying,
week because of the because the stress.
They don't get enough sleep.
And they get lack of sleep. And so I know we're talking about a lot of stuff on this, but tying the sleep into it, it's really important. Sleep is so hugely important for not only our immune system, but our mental faculties, because you're ready for this. This is going to blow your mind. But sleep, we don't really need sleep. What we need is REM, which is the deepest level of sleep. And a lot of people think, oh, I need 8 hours of sleep or 10 hours of sleep. No, you don't. Everybody needs a little different, but if you can get into really good sleep cycles, which this might be hard for some caregivers, depending on their situation, they might be up a lot at night. But for the average person, if they can try to regulate their sleep so they fall asleep at the same time and wake up at the same time, your body loves rhythms or patterns. We have a respiratory cycle. We have a cardiovascular cycle that we can override with exercise. Or women have menstrual cycles. We even have sleep cycles. And you ready? We get our best REM sleep from 10 to midnight. If we can maximize the 10 to midnight, we don't know why, but that's the best time to get REM sleep. So if we can get any habits of sleeping best then. Then we get intermittent REM till about 3:30 in the morning, and then we're done. We might fall into REM sleep for just a minute or two right before we wake up, and that's when we remember our dreams. But it's, it feels like a long time, but it wasn't. It's just a minute or two.
Yeah, well, there's such a balance, you know. You want energy during the day, but then at nighttime you want to sleep. My wife has insomnia, so she has trouble sleeping. She uses sleep aids, but she still doesn't fall asleep until 1 or 2 or sometimes 3 in the morning, and she'll sleep till noon. And that's the pattern that she's been in, but I don't know what you can do about it.
Yeah, it's a tough pattern to break, but I'll tell you, it is breakable. It's just challenging, just like somebody who sleeps on their stomach. I mean, you're asleep. How do you know you're on your stomach? But you can wake up, go, oh, I'm on my stomach, force yourself to roll over, and over months you can change that pattern. And I'll tell you, this is where I learned this was 11 years ago. I met a doctor, C.J. Mertz, brilliant man, mm-hmm. and he said directly to me, he goes, you know, Dr. Shetland, sleep is highly overrated. We don't need sleep, we need REM. And I want you to join the 4 o'clock club. And I thought he was insane at the time when he told me this. And he goes, no, just try it for a week. And if you like it after a week, I want you to do it for 21 days. Now, why would he ask me to do it for 21 days?
I don't know.
Because that forms a habit if we can do something
straight
in a row 21 times.
That's right.
Yeah.
Break a bad habit.
Well, I remember waking
up.
Exactly. 5 times not doing it, we can break the good habit. But 21 days doing it, we can form a good habit. So he literally challenged me to do this. And I thought, you're crazy, but I will give this a shot for a week. So I woke up at 4:30 in the morning. And stayed up all day because he told me to just push through it. Don't take a power nap if you can help it. Uh-huh. Just if you get tired, drink water, do some push-ups, get that heart pumping, whatever. And I remember 9:30 that night, I was just dragging my knuckles to bed. And I always laid in bed thinking about, worrying about stuff like, oh, tomorrow I got to do this, and what's the butt about that, and oh, finances, all this. My head hit the pillow, and I was out cold, and I was in REM sleep, literally within 2 minutes. And I woke up, my alarm was set for 4 o'clock, and I woke up at like 3:59 or something, wide awake before my alarm even woke up. And boom,
really?
I was in the cycle. And then I did it for 7 days, and I thought, oh my gosh, this isn't so bad. I had a ritual, though, in the morning. I woke up, I did my I meditated for a few minutes, I did exercise to get that heart pumping, read a good book or a little scripture. I had my morning rituals to kind of push me through, and I felt like an hour and a half into the day that I had done a whole day's worth of successful work and accomplished so much before I even walked out the door to actually go to work. And after that, I'm like, I got to keep doing this. And I did it. I've done it for 11 years now because it's just amazing.
And how much do you sleep each night?
I would say I sleep 6 to 7 hours a night.
Yeah. I mean, we all know these guys who boast, oh, I only sleep 3 hours a night. That's all I need, or 4 hours a night. I say, how do you do it? So I guess they're doing that.
Well, this gentleman, Dr. Mertz, he would travel the world teaching doctors things, and he would tell me, there are some days where I will just go to bed at 10 and wake up at midnight, and I'll go for 22 hours, and I'll do it all over again. That's how sold he was on this, because the research shows that 10 to midnight is our golden REM time. We don't know why. We just are programmed that way. So every hour of sleep we get before midnight is worth 4 hours after midnight, according to research.
So that would help caregivers a lot.
That would.
Well, listen, we've got 5 minutes to go before the end of the show. Let's talk quickly about your spine and the relationship between the brain and the body, because that's kind of an interesting topic.
Well, as we talk about it, in that embryological stage, when we're just, a week to 2 weeks old, originally we're just this big ball of cells that are called stem cells, which is what's so cool about stem cells is they don't have an identity, but if we take a stem cell and put it next to another cell, like a nerve cell, it will turn into a nerve cell. So we're just groupies by nature, right down to the cellular level. Yeah, we are. Our program. But a miracle happened not only when we were formed, when the two cells met, the sperm and the egg, to form the embryo, but 2 weeks later, this ball of cells that are all exactly the same, all of a sudden another miracle happens where we start to take shape, and these cells say, let's be an eyeball, these ones, let's be a kidney, and we start to form into organs and tissues and systems, the digestive system, the nervous system, the respiratory system. And the very first one to develop was our nervous system. And it literally branched out and plugged into every living cell, and as we grew and developed, every living cell, even in us today, with the trillions of cells that make up our body, every living cell has a nerve innervation. And so a lot of times we put stuff on genetics and, you know, the inside the cell things, but we got to think pre-cellular. Just going back to Harrison's story of, we had to fire up that nervous system, make sure the blueprints were working between the brain and the body, and we had to get the right nutritional building blocks in and keep the toxins out so we could build healthy cells to replace those dying off cells. And that, I think, is the pattern or the recipe that I was inspired to use for him and for many of my patients to help them overcome things that a lot of people think are incurable or they've suffered from for a long time. And I would just say, look, the recipe works if you just help that nervous system, help your brain and body communicate. God didn't build us to function inappropriately. He built us to function perfectly. But sometimes, and this is coming back to that faith and science thing, sometimes we put a little too much faith in science and pills and potions and lotions, but we need to look a little more centrally and go, wait a minute, I am a perfect, perfect human being designed innately by a higher power, if we believe that, which I wholeheartedly do. Why do I think me or my pills or potions are smarter than my innate intelligence or my God-given design? And so that's why I think sometimes less is more, where we just need to get out of our own way. The body needs a little help sometimes, but sometimes not as much as we think we need. Is that too much? Is that too out there?
No, I can't wait to get to bed before 10 tonight and see if it works.
Yeah, give it a shot for a couple days. I mean, you got to get in that pattern, but it's magical. It's awesome.
Because sometimes I'll wake up early, and I don't know why, and it's like 4 hours, 5 hours sleep, and I says, there's no way I can survive today. And I did it, and I'm like, how did I do it? But I must have been going through some REM. And how does the body know that it's 10 o'clock? I mean, how does it know that?
It's amazing how we're programmed. We are such a cool microcosm universe of this human body. But I'll tell you, we are very programmable. I mean, there's times when a kid has to get up for scout camp and he's excited about it, or we got Christmas around the corner. Why do kids wake up so early on Christmas? Because it's important to them, versus when school's in session, it's like, oh, I really want to sleep in today. But when something's important and we can program ourselves to wake up early, we can do it.
True.
And then we can start going to bed on time. And then we get in that pattern, and all of a sudden it's easy. And I want you and the listeners to just use this example to yourself. Have you ever woke up 3:30, 4 in the morning, wide awake, going, why am I awake right now?
Yep.
You just mentioned that you did. Yep. Well, the reason is your body has had enough REM, and it's ready to go. But our patterns say, oh, I got nothing to do for the next 3 hours. Let me go back to sleep. And how do we feel when we wake up later when we've had too much sleep?
You're more tired, and we can't go to sleep.
More tired. If we have not enough REM or too much sleep, we're tired. It's fatiguing. So it's actually more energizing to sleep less but get more REM sleep. And there are cool tools out there now you can track your REM sleep. One's called the Zio Clock. A lot of apps you can download for your phone now. You can track your REM, and you can really start playing with it and see how you can tweak that. But anyway, fun topic.
Well, I can't believe we've run out of time. It just went way too fast. They say, you know, time flies when you're having fun. So thank you again, Dr. J, for allowing me to interview you, and thank you to my listening audience for tuning in today and every Wednesday at noon Pacific Standard Time, and also Saturdays at 3:30 p.m. We rebroadcast this. And don't forget, all of our shows are recorded podcasts. You can listen to every one of them on our website any time of the day, 24/7, at DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com or on iTunes. Just the links are on the website. And by the way, when you're on our site, don't forget to take that quiz, Are You a Candidate for Burnout, so that you can get the free copy of my book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. And if you want to contact Dr. J. Shetland, here's how you can do it. Go to Shetland.com. That's S like Sam, Shetlin.com. Or if you want to call his office, it's 801-446-5100. That's 801-446-5100 or Shetlin.com, Shetlin. So goodbye, thank you, and we'll see you next week. God bless you. Thank you, Dr. J.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific, 3 o'clock Eastern, to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process, right here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.